Genesis 25, verse 1. Abraham took another wife whose name was Keturah. She bore him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. Jokshan, father of Sheba and Dedan. The sons of Dedan were Asherim, Letushim, and Lumim. The sons of Midian were Ephah, Epher, Hanok, Abida, and Eldea. All these were the children of Keturah. Abraham gave all he had to Isaac. So my understanding is that, like, even if a son was born to a concubine or another wife, traditionally that son, regardless, would get the inheritance, basically the oldest. And so in this case, Isaac is the one that God had promised, but God did provide Ishmael a promise for him too. Genesis 25 and 6. But to the sons of his concubines, Abraham gave gifts. And while he was still living, he sent them away from his son Isaac eastward to the east country. These are the days of the years of Abraham's life, 175 years. Abraham breathed his last and died in a good old age, an old man and full of years, and he was gathered to his people. Isaac and Ishmael, his sons, buried him in the cave of Machpelah in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, east of Mamre. The field that Abraham purchased from the Hittites, where Abraham was buried with Sarah his wife. After the death of Abraham, God blessed Isaac his son, and Isaac settled in Beer Lahai Roy. These are the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar the Egyptian, Sarah's servant, bore to Abraham. These are the names of the sons of Ishmael, named in the order of their birth: Nebaioth, the firstborn of Ishmael, and Kedar, and Abdiel, Mibsem, Mishma, Duma, Massa, Hadad, Tima, Jetur, Naphish, and Kedema. These are the sons of Ishmael, and these are their names by their villages and by their encampments. 12 princes according to their tribes. These are the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years. He breathed his last and died, and he was gathered to his people. They settled from Havilah to Shur, which is opposite Egypt in the direction of Assyria. He settled over against all his kinsmen. These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham fathered Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban, the Aramean, to be his wife. And Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his prayer, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. The children struggled together within her and said, "If it is thus, why is this happening to me?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other, the older shall serve the younger." So this is seems to be a repeating pattern, that the oldest, as traditionally in their culture, would get the inheritance or the main inheritance, and over again, it's just a pattern. And if you were, I guess, if you studied it and weren't as lackadaisical as I was on it, you could understand it better. But I think it's perhaps an intentional thing that God has patterns like this, and I think something for us to notice. Just generically, you see this with Jesus talking about the greatest of the kingdom of heaven would be the servant, and it could be related to that general sort of idea. But the patterns throughout Genesis, not just this one, but other patterns, are perhaps things where God wants to bring our attention to something. There's something that maybe He wants us to learn there. Verse 24, when her days to give birth were completed, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red, all his body like a hairy cloak, so they called his name Esau. Afterward, his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob, which I think, if I remember right, on the tip of my head is heel grabber. I don't know for sure, though. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. When the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man dwelling in tents. Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. And so as we'll see also, Rebekah works with Jacob in making Jacob to become a trickster, getting things by trickery. So for a lot of his life, he was basically a trickster. And Rebekah seems participated in that. Once when Jacob was cooking stew, so here we have an example of that, Esau came in from the field and he was exhausted. And Esau said to Jacob, "Let me eat some of that red stew, for I am exhausted." Therefore his name was called Edom. Jacob said, "Sell me your birthright now." Esau said, "I am about to die. What use is birthright to me?" Jacob said, "Swear to me now." So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew and ate and drank and rose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. The picture of this, and it's talked about more in the New Testament, is the idea of that we are tempted to give up the eternal for just something really temporary and very mundane and pretty silly. Part of this is that Esau should have faith in God, that God will provide him. That God can actually help him live through this hunger. So part of the problem is that it's a lack of faith, not just greedy for stew, but it's a faith issue.
I think some good points were brought up as we studied the words about the dangers of letting some small sin take something much greater away from us, that Ethan made, that Esau giving up his birthright for just a mere bowl of stew that's just like what we do when we sin. And so it was a good analogy.
I think I'm going to go ahead and take the liberty of reading the 26th chapter. And I'm glad, Ethan, you read the 25th. That had the hard names in it. So put it real high, about right. So what we can do is just bump up our chapters on the schedule if you would do that later. So let's go ahead. I actually got into this chapter in one of our previous studies. As Ethan said, this seems to be a repeating pattern in some of God's people. And we're about to read here in the 26th chapter about Isaac and Abimelech. So let's continue there. I'm in New King James. And there was a famine in the land beside the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. So we're a very similar situation before Abraham was driven from Canaan down into Egypt. And Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines in Gerar. Then the Lord appeared to him and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Live in the land which I shall..." Set my throat there. "Of which I shall tell you, dwell in the land, and I will be there with you and bless you, for to you and your descendants I will give all these lands. I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father, and I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of the heaven. I will give your descendants all these lands, and in their seed all the lands of your seed, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commands, my statutes, and my laws." So Abraham dwelt in Gerar, so it was Isaac dwelt in Gerar, and the men of the place asked about his wife. And he said, "She is my sister," for he was afraid to say, "She is my wife," because he thought, "Lest the men of the place kill me for Rebekah." So it's kind of confusing here, but this kind of jumps back to the time, similar situation with Abraham, "because she is beautiful to behold. Now it came to pass when he had been there a long time, Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked through the window and saw, and there was Isaac showing endearment, embrace to Rebekah, his wife. Then Abimelech called Isaac and said, "Quite obviously she is your wife, so how could you say she is my sister?" And Isaac said to him, "Because I said, lest I die on account of her." Very similar story to Abraham. And Abimelech said, "What is this that you have done to us? One of the people might soon have laid with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us." So Abimelech charged all his people, saying, "He who touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death." Then Abraham sowed in that land and reaped in the same year 100-fold. So it was just a very prosperous year, for Isaac there. And the Lord blessed him, and the men before began to prosper and continued prospering until he had come very prosperous. For he had possessions of flocks, and possessions of herds, and a great number of servants. So the Philistines envied him. Now the Philistines had stopped up all the wells which his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham, his father, and they had filled them with earth. And Abimelech said to Isaac, "Go away from us, so you are much mightier than we." Basically asking him to leave. Then Isaac departed from there and pitched his tent in the valley of Gerar, and dwelled there. And Isaac dug again the wells of water which they had dug in the days of Abraham his father, for the Philistines had stopped them up after the death of Abraham. And he called them by the names which his father had called them. Also Isaac's servants dug in the valley and found water, a well of running water there. But the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with Isaac's herdsmen, said, "This water is ours." So he called the name of the well Issach, because they quarreled with him. Then they dug another well, and they quarreled over that one too. Water was a precious thing in that land. It was somewhat of a semi-arid land. So he called its name Sitnah. And he moved from there and dug another well, and they did not quarrel over it. So he called its name Rehoboth, and because he said, For now the Lord has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land. Then he went up from there to Beersheba, and the Lord appeared to him the same night and said, I am the Lord your father, Abraham. I am God of your father, Abraham. Do not fear him, for I am with you. And I will bless you and multiply your descendants for my servant Abraham's sake. So he built an altar there and called on the name of the Lord, and he pitched his tent there, and there Isaac's servants dug a well. Then Abimelech came to him from Gerar with Azusa, one of his friends, and Pichol, the commander of the army, and Isaac said to them, why have you come to me, since you hate me and have sent me away from you? And they said, we have certainly seen the Lord is with you. I think that's a notable quality, something that people can see today in our lives. If indeed we're a very worldly person, and our language is coarse, and we're not a person of our word, people will see that. But if indeed we are a Christian at heart, and we want to help, and we love others, and we minister to others, that's a way in which we are preaching. People will notice things like that. Let me reread the 28th. But they said, we have certainly seen that the Lord is with you. So we said, let there now be an oath between us, between you and us, and let us make a covenant with you, that you will do us no harm, since we have not touched you, and since we have done nothing to you but good, and have sent you away in peace. You are now blessed of the Lord. I think that's very important. We talked about that last Sunday. Peace is a quality that Paul encouraged in the early congregations that many of he and Silas and others had founded in Asia Minor, Macedonia, Greece. And so this is a good thing, to have peace with your neighbor, especially if it's a somewhat of a armed neighbor, if you will, the Philistines. They were known for their fighting skills. So he made them a feast, and they ate and they drank. Then they arose early in the morning and swore an oath with each other, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. So kind of a powwow or a celebration feast. And I think this is a very smart move that Isaac made. He was apprehensive, but it appears that the Philistines were sincere in their desire for peace, and he accepted that. And it came to pass the same day that Isaac's servants came and told him about the well which they had dug, and said to him, we have found water. So he called it Sheba. Therefore, the name of the city is Beersheba to this day. And, of course, some of these places, the waters there at Meribah and other places, are still identifiable today. Some of them are not, but Beersheba evidently is. When Esau was 40 years old, so now we're talking of the brother of Isaac, when Esau was 40 years old, he took as wives Judith, the daughter of Beeri and the Hittite, Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and there were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. I think that's one way this particular writer is saying that they didn't get along too well, a little bit of a rivalry, or just didn't have personalities that didn't have the same priorities that Isaac and Rebekah had. So one reason we're reading through these Old Testament chapters, of course, we started at the beginning of time, and now we're down to Isaac and Esau, that it helps build the foundation of what's coming in upcoming days. And then the Israelites are formed into a nation, and that went down through history for a couple thousand years and was very much a part of God's creation and plan. And so by going through these chapters, we need to put in our mind that God has written us a history book. A lot of us studied history in the United States, but this is a history of God's people. And it's quite long. It went over, it's over 6,000 years as of in our day and age. So I think it's important to know the history behind God's people.
I just had a quick comment kind of related to the readings. It was just an observation. So, you know, Abraham lied about his wife, and it was to the same person. It was Abimelech. And if you remember, Abimelech, you know, was getting on to Abraham for your, you know, bringing a curse upon him and his household and his kingdom, you know, for because they might have taken Abraham's wife. And then Isaac comes and does the same thing to the same king and tells Isaac the same thing. And one of the things that occurred to me is it's almost like Abimelech fears God more than Abraham and Isaac did in those cases. You certainly see the fear of God, and because he knows the consequence of taking someone else's wife. And I don't know, I guess what I gleaned from that is, you know, don't ever have a moment in our lives where even a common person would appear to fear God more than the Christian. You know, we are to always fear and respect and reverence God, even though it looked like there was, you know, those situations where Abraham and Isaac were more trusting their own wisdom than they were God's wisdom. But anyways, just an observation there about Abimelech. He knew better than to fall for, you know, to get into that situation. So we as Christians should also know better without, you know, just because of our fear of God.